Sherry, what's the best compliment you've ever gotten?
Well, I'll tell you what I used to think was the best compliment. And it was years ago when Kathy Lip and I were first friends. She used to call me one of the hardest working people she knew. And I thought that was the best compliment.
It is.
It's a really good compliment. And then a few years into knowing her, I started doing battle with perfectionism. And I realized I don't want to be the hardest working person anybody knows. I want to be fun. I want to be creative. But hardworking, it's not a bad compliment. I just don't value it the way I used to. How about you? What's the best compliment you've ever been given?
Well, your answer calls mine into question. Because my best compliment came from you, Sherry Gregory.
Uh-oh.
What? When you were at my house last summer, we had worked all day and you were like, are you ready to call it quits? And I was like, oh, let's go ahead and finish this. And at the end, you said, Amy, you have out Sherry Gregory'd Sherry Gregory. And then you said that was the most egotistical compliment you had ever given. But I loved it. I knew what it meant. And I was so proud.
Well, and it was absolutely meant as high praise. And we also had lots of fun. So
yes, we did. So what's the worst compliment you've ever gotten?
You know, this is going to just come across so bad. We're just going to lose listeners right now. Uh-oh. I just hate it when people tell me I'm smart. Because I don't care about being smart. It just doesn't matter to me. And I really hate it when people are like, well, could you do this for me? Because you're so smart. You know, like they use it as a way, like they think that complimenting me for my intent. It's like, I had nothing to do with it. I did not choose either of my parents. I did not choose the home I grew up in. Compliment something I have some impact on. Don't, yeah. Being smart is just, and I know for some people, it's the biggest thing and they really value it. I could care less. How about you?
Okay, Dr. Gregory.
Oh, I know. Are you saying I'm being a hypocrite? Whatever.
Well, the worst compliment I've been getting all the time recently, honestly, a man walked up to me like, I was at the in the hospital waiting room during my dad's surgery and said, has anybody ever told you you look like Kris Jenner?
You've got to be kidding.
And I'm like, every day. Thank you. What is up with that?
No.
And you know, I mean, I don't want to be a hater, but I just don't know that Kris and I would really get along. So anyway, we should probably move along right there. So we had a listener who said, I'm a 67-year-old Christian woman who loves to work with women in many different areas. I still have a desire to do what's my very best, and I fear falling below my expectations and those of others. Sometimes it seems like the pressure comes from glowing compliments from others, which only makes me try harder to live up to what they want. So compliments are great, but they're trouble when we start living for them. And that's when we know we've crossed over into people pleasing, which is the topic we're going to discuss with Katie Reed today.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules, the podcast that equips you to lose who you're not, love who you are, and live your one life well.
Today, we're talking to Katie Reed, author of Made Like Martha, Good News for the Woman Who Gets Things Done. Katie encourages try-hard women to find grace in the unraveling of life. She's a national speaker and a singer-songwriter, pastor's wife, and a mom to 5 loud children, so she's anything but bored.
So if you're the kind of grit and grace girl who tends to be a bit heavy on the grit and a little light on the grace, Katie has got good news for you today.
So, Katie, you have addressed one of my favorite people, Martha, but she's challenging because she's been talked about so much. So what made you want to write another book about Martha?
Well, I hear you. There are a lot of books about Martha, but Martha, same here. One of my favorite characters, probably because I can relate so much to her. And I feel like the poor thing has gotten such a bad rap, right?
True. This is one of my pet peeves. Man, did women's ministry pile on or what?
Well, and for centuries, we've bought into a lie, I believe, Mary's and Martha's alike, that there is something wrong with being like Martha. And I think back as if I were there at the Garden of Eden, really wasn't there, but I can read about it, right? And the serpent twist things around with Eve, right? And Eve adds to what God said. And I honestly think, I mean, he kind of gave me this revelation on my couch, and I was just jumping for joy when I realized he didn't ask us to be Mary. And I think he might have asked us to emulate something, but he didn't ask us to change our temperament. And I was shouting glory hallelujah when I realized. But I was mad too, because I was like, here are all these wonderful women that are made like Martha, that we've bought into this lie, or we've been told this lie, that we need to be someone more than we already are, or someone less, because maybe that's what they need to say. You need to be a little less, tone it down. But here's the thing. It's not true. And I just want to bring freedom to people. You know, when Jesus corrects Martha, I don't think he was saying stop cooking, because they needed to eat, right?
People were hungry. Yeah.
Now, listen, could Jesus have multiplied bread and fish? He might have, but he might have wanted her to keep cooking. But I think he was asking her to do it from a different place, but not necessarily stop being a Martha, because I believe he made her to be a woman that gets things done.
Beautiful. Well, tell us, you talk about the modern day Martha. Who is that?
If you love a to-do list, you are a modern Martha.
Oh, girl.
I mean, that's the best way I can describe it. If you are a to-do list kind of gal, that is you, whether it gets done or not, right? But here's the thing. One of my endorsers, she messaged me and she said, Katie, these check marks in your book are giving me life. And I said, I know. So, because there's a check mark on the front and there's a Bible saying in the back where you can literally take your pen and check it off. And I was just so happy about that. If that excites you to check things off your list, I think you are a modern Martha.
Well, I was going to say, I love the cover of your book, because just seeing that beautiful check all the way in the box just gives me a good hit of adrenaline. It makes me feel like all is right with the world. Well, as you may well know, Katie, our listeners are kind of a mix of reforming perfectionists and people pleasers, and then those of us who are highly sensitive people. And so in chapter 2, you talk about laying down what if and lifting up even if. So what kinds of what if do you find that women are wrestling with?
Well, you know, I did a very professional survey on Facebook, wink, wink, and I asked women, I'm like, what do you worry about? And they came in with all of these things. I mean, someone's like, what if I'm not enough for my kids? Or I have a friend who is married to an African-American man. And she's like, what if he gets wrongly accused or pulled over? Then I've got, you know, everything from big and small things. You know, people like, what if I don't turn in my paper for school on time? I mean, everything you could think of across the gamut. People are asking, you know, those worries, those what if, I kind of imagine those, you know, flies swarming overhead, you know, what if this happens? What if that happens? And when you are made like Martha, we can wear those worries as a badge sometimes, because we can be like, we're responsible. We are thinking through every scenario. I know, Amy, you've got some home renovations going on. So you, I'm imagining, tell me if I'm wrong, you're thinking in your mind, okay, what if they start working at this part of the house? I need to be over here. And some of that can be problem solving, right? But it can easily morph into this worry fest. And so I talk about laying down these what ifs and choosing to trust God, even if those worries happen. And that is so hard. I mean, it's easy to write a cute little statement that says that. It is much harder to live. But I think about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and how they said, we know God can deliver us, but even if he doesn't, we're still going to trust him. And I think when those worries sometimes become a reality, we have a choice to make. Are we going to believe that he's a good father even then or not? I mean, we have a choice in those moments. But what we talk about in the book, that he is such a good father and he loves us, his daughters, and he loves us even when we're in a worry fest. And I think that's something I used to not believe. I used to believe, you know, if I'm missing the mark, he's not pleased with me. And once I realized, like, he already settled his love for me on the cross, and that was nothing I did, it gave me a lot of freedom. It took me a while to get there, but once I got there, I was like, oh, Lord, thank you so much.
Okay, so I'm going to get real personal here, Katie. What specific what if is your biggest struggle?
Oh, man. Well, I'll give a quick story to illustrate. So we have 5 children. We have 4 children biologically and 1 through adoption. And my biggest fear with adoption was that it would fall through.
Mm.
It really doesn't happen all that much, but you hear, whether it's a Lifetime movie or, you know, someone tells you. And that was my big, like, what if? Like, I don't think I can make it if this happens. Well, that happened. We got a call. Can you be at the hospital tomorrow? Yes. We get there. We walk in. We never even made it past the waiting room. We never met the baby or the mom. She had actually left the hospital for a couple days, came back and changed her mind. And that was so, so hard. And I had some words with the Lord of like, really, God, we stepped out in faith. You know, do you really think we can handle this? And then I thought about having to go home and tell my kids who are waiting for their brother to arrive home. I mean, it was like, not only was I going to grieve, but I had to be strong for these other people, you know, that were grieving too. And, you know, the end of the story is, you know, 3 months later, we adopted our son. But even if it wouldn't have had this happy ending, which I know many people haven't, he was still so faithful to us. He gave us a peace, even though I was like literally sick to my stomach. There was a peace there that could not be explained. And I remember a friend calling me and she said, you know, this is like a Job moment, but from Job's perspective, we might not know why this ever happened, but he is good. And in that moment, I could have chosen to respond like an orphan, you know, of like, I've been abandoned by my father, by him not giving me this child, or as a daughter. And obviously I had my shout out moments to God, but he got us through it. Another friend of mine, her husband had gotten cancer, and that was her biggest worry. And she said to me, you know what? Sometimes when your biggest worry happens, it bolsters your faith because you realize, oh my goodness, this was the thing I was dreading the most, and God was still faithful in it.
So Katie, in chapter 5, you say, I put on my misdependability sash and pile on the responsibilities. I do good works to gain worth. I try hard and work fast, but it electrocutes me. My efforts to be the best zap me of energy and burn up joy. So people pleasing on the surface seems like such a harmless habit. It's almost, we treat it like a spiritual gift. So talk to us about the energy zap and the joy burnout you've experienced and seen other women experience too.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Amy, that it can look like a noble thing to try to keep everybody happy or pleased. But I have this picture in my mind of myself completely depleted. 3 of my big kids were at vacation Bible school at our church, and I needed to come pick them up. Well, I had been working so hard on some work projects and, you know, staying up late and getting up early and just trying to make everything perfect that I had nothing left. And I was leaning up against this cement wall, hoping no one would talk to me because I didn't even think I had the energy for that. And I went home and I was basically sick with exhaustion and I had completely depleted myself. And my nice, caring, smart husband had been trying to tell me this for a while, but it took me being in bed for a day. Now, listen, I have struggled with that since. It's not like, you know, one and done. I wish I could say that, but I'm a little stubborn. So I keep trying to do things the way I think they should go. But it literally physically wore me out, but I was operating under this belief that I have to be flawless to be loved and accepted, even though I don't think anyone was putting that on me except myself. I mean, God certainly wasn't, because he knew I was flawed and he came to die for me because of it. And, you know, my husband had grace for me, but I was literally making myself sick trying to do so much and do it exceptionally.
Sherry and I might recognize ourselves in that, Katie.
I have no idea what either of you are talking about.
Well, and you have this other term that just hit home so hard. You talk about receptivity deficiency. And so what do you mean by that? And how has it impacted your relationships?
As a woman who gets things done, I tend to, even from a very young age, I acted like a mother. Now, listen, my mom is a wonderful, capable mom, but for some reason, that was my partly temperament, but I wanted to care for others, do things, take charge, maybe a little bossiness in there, you know, as a firstborn girl, but God showed me something. So last year, do you guys choose one word for the year?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you both do that? Okay. So my word I felt like God gave me was daughter. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like kind of a weird word. I mean, I have daughters, but he showed me, Katie, you know how to be a mom, mm-hmm. but you don't really know how to be a daughter. Wow. And what he showed me is that Martha had this issue as well. The best way to describe it is you have a hard time receiving. Because, you know, if you have a loving father and he wants to give you gifts and take care of you, like, you're going to receive that, right? But I was living like a slave, like that. I had to earn that. I had to do enough. I had to take care of everybody else. But I had a hard time just receiving something just because. I felt like I had to be good enough, and God showed me that grace is a gift to be received, not a prize to be earned. And that made all the difference. It didn't diminish that I was wired to do, but that was my starting place, to learn to receive first.
Well, and you have this great quiz in your book, and Sherry and I, we might know which Disney princess we are. We love a quiz. So tell us about this assessment in your book to help us see whether we have that mentality, that same issue that you're talking about.
Right. So we have two assessments. One is called the hired help assessment. And another way to describe the hired help is like the orphan mentality, or like a attitude of scarcity. I mean, any of that, kind of the same type of thing. But in this assessment, you just kind of check if you believe these statements or not. And it's not to like answer how you think, you know, you've got to be honest, not how we all want to get the A, right? Or the A+, but just to say, here's where I am.
She's and getting personal those... now, Amy. She's getting real personal.
I'm really good at Sunday school answers. I bet I could pass that quiz.
But here are just a couple of the statements. And I will say this, in the book, it says, this is not a verdict, but an opportunity to evaluate honestly where you are in relation to this hired help mentality. So this is not the end game, right? This is a growth tool. Mm-hmm. But for example, you have a hard time trusting and receiving love. Typically, when you get a yes, you feel loved. When you get a no, you feel unloved. Other people's success might feel like a threat to your happiness. You might worry that you'll lose what you already have. And one more is you think you're worth what you can earn.
That's so powerful. And look, I'm the one that usually tears up in these interviews, and I've seen Sherry tearing up a couple times.
Sherry's a mess
here.
Over here. So tell us about the other assessment.
These hit hard. Yeah.
So a beloved daughter's mentality assessment. The beloved daughter believes there's enough to go around. She's not left out or left behind by God. She can extend grace to others because she has been shown so much grace by God. She celebrates when others succeed and thanks God for his goodness and gives him credit. When she fails, she knows she's forgiven by Christ and able to forgive herself with his help. She believes that God's yeses and nos are for her good.
Wow. Wonderful.
Chapter 7 is titled The Middle Ground Between Striving and Slowing, Stewarding Well Without Overdoing It. And this is something that many of our listeners have a hard time with. And I know that especially those of us who are highly sensitive people, we are so afraid of being perceived as lazy or weak, or heaven forbid that we see ourselves as precious. So what practical advice do you have for our listeners who are ready to quit overdoing it, but they don't know where to start stopping?
Absolutely. Well, there's a tool in the book called the Streetlight Strategy. And I need things just spelled out plainly for me, right? And so think about coming to an intersection, okay? The lights can be red, yellow, or green. And so this tool helps you realize, okay, if I'm at this intersection, I need to be aware of my surroundings. For example, I was asked to serve on a committee not too long ago. And for me, this was a clear red light situation. I mean, I was working on the book. We have a busy family. I didn't have extra room on my plate. If I would have added this, something would have started spilling off. And so for me, it was a red light situation where I knew pretty clearly and quickly, I need to say no to this. Now, there are times when we're faced with something where maybe we're supposed to say yes, but something else needs to come off that plate. My husband has challenged me with that often of, okay, you can say yes to this, but what else or what two things are you going to take off so that you can do that? And that's so hard for a woman that likes to get things done. But I think the other can be true. Maybe you don't have a lot of things on your plate and God's presenting some opportunities. So red light situation, you know, you need to know if you are packed to the max already and you might need other people in your life reminding you, hey, you don't have extra room right now. And then if you find yourself in a yellow situation, okay, if the light's yellow, you have to think, do I have enough time to get across here? Or do I need to get ready to stop? Mm. A lot of this idea is, okay, who's riding with you? You know, are you a single gal that maybe your choices aren't affecting a lot of other people and you feel like you have some freedom there? You know, maybe like me, you've got a full minivan and you've got to figure out, like, can I add more or do I need to take some things off? And obviously we want to say yes to God assignments. My friend said the other day, I think Lisa Jo Baker had told her, you know, God doesn't call us to things to overwhelm us. Mm. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I do feel overwhelmed. It doesn't mean things aren't going to be hard, but I think it's also like he doesn't want us to live in the state of being worn out either. And so we also talk about there can be wisdom in delegating. That's not a weakness. That can be wisdom. There are people that have read my book that are Marys and they don't struggle as much maybe with all of these things, but they said it helped me understand other people that are wired that way. But then also some, like I have a couple Mary friends that appreciate me because I kind of help them step it up. And I appreciate them because they're kind of like, you know, you got a lot going on. You might need to pare back a little bit.
So how about the listener who knows she needs to learn how to rest, but she's tried, but she knows, but there's so much. Do you have any simple, doable first steps for the woman who just needs to learn how to rest? Because telling her to just stop isn't going to, well, it never worked for me, at least.
For me, I knew I could just keep working because I enjoy working. Mm-hmm. It's fun for me. You know, even if I'm stressed out, I enjoy that sometimes, most of the time. So we have tried on Sundays to just, like, I try not to be on my phone very much. I try to read books. And I realized rest is not a punishment inflicted upon me. It is an invitation to recharge. And the other thing is, some of us think rest has to look one way. And when I realized it didn't, there was so much freedom. I mean, just even in our family, we rest in all different ways. I like a 20-minute power nap, and then I love to go outside and read a book. My husband likes the, like, 2-hour nap, you know, where he's down for the count. And then I have friends that love to go running, and that is restful for them. So it doesn't always have to be your feet are up and you're laying flat on the couch, unless that's life-giving to you. But I think, yes, we need to take a break from work. Sometimes I think it's hard for us to rest, yet it communicates such a trust in God. And I have found it to be true. The times that I do take to rest, he multiplies my productivity later on. It really does work. So if you are not convinced, maybe you just need to think, okay, well, if anything, it'll just make me more productive later if I take this break. But we do need rest. Absolutely. It is important. There's so many women, you know, they're dealing with chronic illness. I have a friend that we talk about in the book that she has to rest 19 hours a day to get a few hours of activity, but she is made like Martha. And so for her, she's still sometimes overdoes it. But I think it reminds us that, wow, our value does not come from our productivity. My brother has Down syndrome. And I talk about him in the book too, of like, he has value because he exists. You know, he doesn't have to do all these things to have value. So why am I so handicapped myself in understanding that? Because I know that's true for him, but yet I still try to do all these things to prove my worth. And God has said, hey, your worth was settled. I made you. I wove you in the womb and I died for you. My Holy Spirit resides in you. My friend Lee Nienhuis, she wrote the book Brave Moms, Brave Kids, and she talks about this idea of triple worth. And I love that. We have triple worth. We're made by God. So we have worth there. Jesus died on the cross for us, and then his Holy Spirit lives in us. And I just love that. We're trying to teach our kids that as well.
That is powerful. Well, give us some closing words, Katie, to encourage the listeners today.
I just want to encourage you, if you are made like Martha, you need to know you are fabulous. There is nothing wrong with being wired to get things done. But in the same breath, the things that you do, may those things be an expression of your love for the Lord, not a way to try to get him to love you, because he already does. And so works are important. There are works he's prepared in advance for us to do, but we want those to be an expression of thankfulness to him, not this striving that we're trying to prove we're enough. We weren't enough, and so Jesus came to be enough for us. And in him, if we have faith in him, we've accepted him, we are enough because he is enough. And that wasn't because we got 50 things checked off our to-do list. He did his one thing, and it's finished. You know, that's what I love. In the book, we have these little "it is finished" activities. Just as a reminder of like, listen, the greatest to do has already been done. There's a big check mark by our salvation, right? And so that should bring a sense of rest into our spirits, even as our hands are busy.
Head on over to gritandgracegirls.com/episode 109.
There you'll find this week's transcript, our Digging Deeper download, the Bible verse art, and you'll be able to enter to win this week's giveaway of Made Like Martha.
We would love to invite you to join the Grit and Grace growth team. Just go to www.patreon.com/gritandgracegirls for all the details.
Next week, we'll be processing together what we learned from Katie.
For today, grow your grit. Embrace God's grace. And when you run across a bad rule, you know what to do. Go right on ahead and break it.